coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Hey Kids Comics. Issue 303, I believe we're at 303.
I believe we are, yes indeed.
Which, the 300 league.
303, yes.
303. Cole, how you feeling?
I'm feeling like we're going to go 303 leagues under the sea.
That's not that much, I don't think.
No, it actually is fairly shallow water, relatively speaking, but...
It's like a bathtub, but I mean, baby steps.
Yeah, exactly. There's only so deep we can go in our Hey Kids Comics submersible.
No, I mean, literally, that's like the depth of a baby step. That's what that is. Yeah. It's a baby step league under the sea.
I think that the league was invented to sound greater than it is. Like 20,000 leagues under the sea, that's a lot. And like, no.
Let's start the show this way. This is a comic book podcast, ladies and gentlemen. What is the conversion rate of a league?
We're going to have that here in just a minute. A league is apparently is a unit of measure that has no set standard.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, just exactly. Like depending on who in Europe you're asking, it's 2.4 to 4.6 statute miles.
Statute miles. Is that okay?
3.9 to 7.4 kilometers.
We can't do this. We can't go down this rabbit hole because we'll end up like how many hand under the sea is the league is where we're going to end up.
Oh.
But we are definitely going deep tonight, as you can probably tell by now. I am your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, your other host, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening. And I apparently that was a deep dive, 60,000 miles under the sea, Jules Verne.
60,000 miles.
Yeah.
60,000.
Is there a place that's that deep?
Yeah, it's called China.
60,000 miles under the sea is land on the other side of the planet.
Way to go, Jules.
He was really counting on the fact that most people don't have a rat's knowledge.
You know, yeah, right. I might be the first person in history to say, way to go, Jules, you dipshit.
Yeah.
No, tonight I'm really interested in the philosophy we're going to be talking about. I guess the psychology of this particular topic. If you listen to Hey Kids Comics or have listened, I am a convert to Cole's way of thinking. And Cole, what is your way of thinking on the topic tonight?
Well, I feel like there are a lot of underrated superheroes.
Sure.
That deserve our attention. And their king is none other than Earth Curry himself, the Incredible Aquaman.
Yeah, all these Johnny Come Latelys running around here loving them some Jason Momoa Aquaman have finally realized just how great Cole has always known Aquaman was, and it took me a couple of years to come around to his way of thinking, but I got there, and I personally think Aquaman's pretty rad too, and it hurt for a long time for Aquaman to be the butt of every joke imaginable in the comic book universe and outside of the comic book universe, whether it was in Robot Chicken or Family Guy or Mad Magazine or what's that show that's awful that everybody likes?
Oh,
the one with like Sheldon.
Old Sheldon. Big Bang Theory. Yeah.
Big Bang Theory. The show with old Sheldon in it.
Sequel to Young Sheldon.
Yeah, right. The sequel
the
to Young
pre-sequel.
Sheldon. I wish that show was like Looper and Young Sheldon went back in time to kill old Sheldon.
But how could that be the best movie? Because Time Cop is even better.
Damn it. I know this is a comic book podcast. We've said it from the top, but if you've not seen Jean-Claude Von Johnson,
oh dear Lord, yes,
we are giving you permission to stop this podcast. Go get on Amazon Prime and watch the shit out of it, and then come back and listen to this. Oh man, it's great. But that's not the point of tonight's show. Tonight's show's not about. We've kicked the dead seahorse of Aquaman pretty hard on this show.
Yes, indeed. You know, Aquaman, what's remarkable, he is the least lauded of the charter members. Charter members of the Justice League.
Preach, Cole. Preach.
I mean, granted, he had even worse fashion sense then with his Playtex rubber glove looking yellow gloves that he wore. But,
they didn't do him very many favors. And they still... what I love about Aquaman, and I guess this is a good place to start, is, like, you're right. He was a charter member of the Justice League. And one of the things I love about the original Justice League is their powers were so... I don't want to say... Everybody kind of had their thing, right? Flash was fast. Wonder Woman was a woman. Martian Manhunter was...
That's your appraisal of Wonder
that
Woman?
That was their appraisal. Because
a chick with a rope.
Because everybody
like Andy Oakley.
Right, exactly like Andy Oakley. Because everybody had the powers that everybody had were kind of the same. They were just as strong as they needed to be. They were just as tough as they needed to be. They could maybe fly, maybe if they needed to. Nobody gave a shit back then about what their powers were. So,
well, the thing that is, you've got a couple of guys that have, by natural ability or, you know, given natural ability or by devices, they're just normal guys, apart from, you know, their superpowers.
Right.
You've got Wonder Woman who is, you know, has the strength of 20 women.
Has 20 people.
Or 19 men.
Oh, no, Cole.
These were comic book readings.
We're progressive. has the strength of 19 women or 20 men is actually probably more accurate.
Yeah. I don't think they would have given her even 19 women. But no. And then you had Martian Manhunter, who's like powers all over the map. But then you got Aquaman, who is, you know, should be the fish out of water, but frankly... He's like the toughest one of all of them.
Right.
Because, you know, he can, like, single-handedly straighten out a Starro tentacle. You don't see anybody else doing that on the cover.
That's right. Just the Aquaman.
He is bending that tentacle to almost a perfect right angle.
But I think the reason I say they didn't do him any favors is they didn't really give him what I would consider the best... Let's just call it superheroing outfits around.
There's a different sense of fashion in Atlantis. And as I mentioned before, apparently they felt like being Aquaman, he needed to prevent getting dishpan hands.
Sure. I mean, it would make sense, right? Like,
because it
covered.
Wasn't enough to stop at pairing orange and gold or orange and green. They had to throw in yellow gloves.
Right, like, it makes no sense. And so I have a theory, Cole. This is akin to a Jedi justification, so...
Okay.
I want you to... I was thinking a lot about why Aquaman didn't hit the way a Superman or a Batman or a Wonder Woman, or even like we talked about Green Lantern and Flash, right? You know, did in the early days, in the Golden Age. And I have a theory. And my theory of people that created Aquaman, and by people I mean the entirety of the comic book industry were creating the story.
Yes.
There was a mythology prior to, let's say, the generation before them. There was a mythology about the sea, you know, that doesn't play the generation after them. And I think they're taking from that sailor mythology, and I would say it probably goes back, you know, it's almost one of those written deep into the DNA type things. you know, where you would hear, you know, Gordon Lightfoot style, hear the stories.
I was thinking about, you know, this sort of, well, it's sort of like, if you look at the generation gap, it becomes Gordon Lightfoot to Jimmy Buffett.
Oh, God, that just, my butt just puckered so hard. So hard.
As you go from songs of the sea that stir the soul to kind of lighthearted tropical tunes.
God damn it, this show. I love doing this show so much. I'm so glad we've been doing this show for over 300 episodes, because never in my 40 years of life has anyone ever juxtaposed Gordon Lightfoot to Jimmy Buffett with musical accompaniment. That is beyond...
There you have it.
That is beyond the crab pail, ladies and gentlemen. But yes, you're not wrong, but you understand what I'm saying. There was a
mythology. Threw up a flip-flop, stepped on a pop-top.
From the Chippewa on down, about the stones of the cheeseburger in paradise. But even back to even back to mythological times, we're retelling the same story over and over again. I just think we hit a wall where they aren't as interesting anymore. And I think that you know forget it, Jake, it's Chinatown happened right around that time and you were out. Like all of a sudden he just wasn't that cool. And they didn't do a great job of saying, no, wait, here's all of the backstory. They almost, a matter of fact, it sort of runs concurrent to what they do in their cinematic universe, where they're just like, yeah, here's a guy, and then you're like, well, he's not that cool. Well, whoa, whoa, whoa. 10 years from now, we'll tell you why he's cool, and then you'll That's like right. him.
You'll discover the coolness. And I think you're right, though, that in many ways, Aquaman is just sort of plugged in as kind of an ancillary character that allows you to, you know, when we get around any stories that have to do with the briny deep, we're covered. But until then, he's sort of a placeholder.
You're right. I had been thinking about this, that topic, right? That piece of information had been in my mind for a week. And I had been turning it over and molding it. It was the piece of granite with the statue in it that I had been working on.
Yes, indeed. And I'm impressed with your appraisal.
All it took to crumble it to rubble was a Gordon Lightfoot, Jimmy Buffett comparison with musical accompaniment, and it all went away. Like, all of it just was like, nope, I'm gonna brush this aside because genius just landed on my doorstep and I don't even need this shit anymore. Get this pile of hot garbage out of my face. Because it was way better. That was a way better analogy than what I was working with.
Well, you sort of set the stage.
Oh, we do what we do. I tee him up.
Yeah,
and
I just
down,
came
buddy.
In. Had to come in behind you and just, you know, do a little extra chiseling.
Yeah, you did. You had to come in, but never mind. Yes, so we are here tonight to talk about what? After all of that.
Yes. Well, the thing about it is we could do, especially given the success, I think this is, what, the second weekend in a row that, or no, this is the third weekend of Aquaman. He's kind of dropping in the numbers because he got his glass kicked. But the fact that 3 weeks later, there's still like $7 million being squoze out of Aquaman.
Yeah.
And Aquaman is the Ant-Man of the DCU. The one everybody thought, well, this will just be a come and go, the flop of the largely uninspired DC Cinematic Universe anyway.
I think you're absolutely right. Like,
this was the get it out of the way movie.
Well, it's one of those, like, okay, so, you know, the doomsayers were out there saying, okay, we've already flopped a Superman movie, a Batman movie, and a Justice League. You know, there's no way that that the butt of all of our jokes for the last 80 years is going to be successful.
Exactly, and you know, I've gone on record to say that I have opposed Jason Momoa from the start, But I have to say that
that's his name now. Don't wear it out.
That's right. I'm very impressed that I haven't done any research. This is just me spitballing here, but I have an inkling that Aquaman may well have outperformed all of its predecessors.
Oh, it did.
Oh, okay, good. I had an inkling that that was the case. So, you know, you find yourself asking, what kind of a world do we live in where Aquaman outsells Batman?
Well, I posted on Instagram for the show because of this issue this week. I posted on Instagram a tweet from James Wan, who is the director.
Yeah.
And the headline from Deadline Hollywood is, this is the week that Aquaman surpassed Dark Knight, so it's surpassed the.
So it's actually surpassed the best Batman film ever.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So and he's working on his script for his second one now. So in that case,
he's doing God's work.
And the joke was about, the joke was he went from the butt of all the jokes to, you know, to being the highest grossing DC star.
Exactly. That's impressive. So my man is finally getting his due.
Right. Right.
And you know, like any fanboy, none of us are ever 100% happy with the way our adopted children are treated.
Right.
So, you know, there's always going to be that sense of, you know, as it was put last night, we had a meeting for Alcon game shows, and one of my presenters was, and I were talking about Aquaman, and he was like, well, you know, Jason Momoa and what's her name that plays Mira, neither of them are strong actors. But you put them together, and they get, like, it sort of bolsters them both.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're good. They're both good.
They're good together.
Actors. Yes. Yeah.
They're better together than they are apart. So from now on, Jason Momoa must co-star with her in every film.
But what's really funny is that's the Marvel.
That's true.
That's the Marvel equation. That's the formula. Is you take guys like Chris Evans, who was not a leading man.
Mm-hmm.
You take guys like.
Hey, he was a leading man in Cellular.
Good God, that movie. you take the Hemsworth, who was very pretty to look at.
Yeah,
but wasn't
as Stuart Balka, Midnight Movie Cowboys said, is that bloody from that? He's from that bloody soap opera my wife loves. Ugh.
But he's not. He doesn't carry a film.
Yeah,
and you take those people and you combine them with really great character actors around them, you know, and all of a sudden you've got blockbuster movies.
Exactly. And in many cases, great directors who can mm-hmm. coax out of them performances no one else ever had.
I'll buy that. But we're not talking about Aquaman comics today.
Yeah, we're here to talk about where my favorite superhero has landed everywhere else over time. When he stepped off the page and really became, you know, got his due. And the thing about it is, I remember as a kid, I think the only Mego action figure I owned was Aquaman.
Have you seen the new Migos yet?
I've seen some of them.
Oh, my God. They're so, so, so good. Like, unbelievable to me that this is happening again. And unbelievable to me that they've got the licenses that they do, which is like Cheers and like all these.
Yeah,
weird...
they're becoming like Funko of cloth costumed characters.
That's true, and I'm all for it, to be completely honest. Okay, yeah. So where he doesn't appear in comics is I think where you're going with this, right? Like.
Yeah, I wanted to. It would be so very easy to cover the long history of Aquaman from a charter member, did I mention that, of the Justice League of America, to off and on having his own title for many years at a stint, to having been inexorably altered by Peter David.
Yes.
And taken by DC in an entirely new direction. And we could go on and on and on about that. But I wanted to explore the fact that DC's most underrated superhero actually had a life outside of the comics before the James Wan Aquaman.
Oh, but he, and it's been a very, very long life, too.
Exactly.
It's been since the and when we were talking about the, you know, the superpowers and the super friends, you know, he was on those shows from Jump Street. 68, 69 is when he got his jump.
Back, yeah, absolutely. In fact, the character himself dates back. Was it like 1960?
The character. That's a valid question. I know I should know that off the top of my head. I'm gonna look it up. You keep talking. I'm gonna do the legwork.
But you know, Justice League number one was, I believe, 1960.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, and
41,
so
Cole.
Good Lord.
More Fun Comics 73 is the origin of Aquaman, 1941.
Good night.
Yeah, long time.
He's been at it a while.
Again, just like all of the characters we talked about, the Batmans, the Supermans, the Flashes, the Green Lanterns, the Wonder Womans, who all, you know, when we dig into them, had this resounding success. Aquaman was not, he was never
invited into the hierarchy.
No, he never
was. He was sort of like the, you know, if you look at, this is for Kelly, he's sort of like Hades.
Yes.
In the pantheon of DC.
Yes.
He's there, but he's like remanded to the, in this case, to the undersea, and periodically gets brought to the fore. And that's one of the reasons that this was really important, because you have, in 1967, the Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure. They could have picked anybody. And somebody said, no, let's go with Aquaman and Aqualad and a goddamn walrus and call it good.
Well, isn't that one of the things that we notice, that we see, is that they just don't know how to use Aquaman.
Yeah. Essentially, like Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure, I can't speak 100% to Superman's portion, but I think more often than not, though other characters would appear from the DCU, the villains were always plug-ins that could have been written for any kid's cartoon. And that was one of the greatest difficulties with any given superhero show in the 60s and 70s, especially, is until the Legion of Doom reared its head in Justice League, or in Super Friends, rather, you got goofball pirates and mad mm-hmm. scientists and stuff. Even Superman wasn't fighting Superman's villains. He was fighting ridiculous, generic, you know, Space Ghost could have fought this if Aquaman hadn't grabbed that character first.
Right, for sure.
But at the same time, it was always fun to me, because I was, you know, from childhood, fascinated with the natural world. So it was so cool to see what kind of animals would be brought into play. Oftentimes, my developing logical mind would rally against the idea of, Aquaman summons electric eels to short out the submarine. It's like, they would die. They're in the mid-Atlantic. The electric eel would have to swim thousands of miles, nautical miles, mind you, and already would have died about the time it got into the nearest delta, into that brackish water, and once it hit seawater, it'd be stone dead.
You're such a nerd. you were an insufferable child, weren't you?
I absolutely was. I remember once... this pet store, they had an octopus available for a while, and guy went and grabbed one of the feeder goldfish and tossed in the water, and the thing was dead before it hit the bottom of the tank. And the octopus just sat there and waited till it floated within arm's length. It wasn't going to waste the slightest bit of energy going after this dead fish.
That's awesome. But yeah, so he was in Super Friends, And they kind of, you know, in the animated show, basically he, refresh my memory, because he didn't have all of his powers as we know them today. He just kind of like threw around, like, I get, I don't want to, like, they were like balls of water that would like smack things and hurt them.
I think that was in the Aquaman show.
That was in the Aquaman show. That, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He would do the water fist thing, or the, and that was that, and summoning the odd jellyfish to sting people.
Right.
It's like, all right, you've got 5 sea wasps around you, punk. You've got to ask yourself, do I really want to experience the speed at which their venom can cross the blood-brain barrier? I'm going to be dead before I even feel the sting.
That's Frank Miller's Aquaman. And that is something...
That is all-star Aquaman.
Why don't we have that?
No.
I've never wanted anything more than what you just described ever.
Yeah, I mean, there are more things in the sea that will kill you.
Ever in my life have I ever
it's
wanted...
It's just like in the... In the Kentucky Fried movie with the poison fish. The poison fish will kill you faster than a bullet.
I've ever wanted more in my life than that. But it wasn't until the Super Friends in like 70, you gave him his...
What you got with Aquaman was this wonderful, subtle introduction. Because, you know, it would be like, every now and again they were obliged to hit the sea. There had to be something going on in the water so Aquaman could have a... He could
be something.
Yeah, he could take point. And, you know, that was always the difficulty in a group setting, is the obligation to put Aquaman back where he belongs. But at the same time, he was always treated like an equal. I mean, for God's sake, Robin was in the Super Friends.
That's true.
If you don't treat Aquaman as an equal when Robin is in the damn Super Friends, then there's something seriously wrong there.
That's true.
I mean, and God bless Kasem for giving him that wonderful Robin voice. But, hey, Batman, this has gone all the way up to 5.
And now, coming in from Nova Scotia, Aquaman singing directly at Edmund Fitzgerald.
It was really cool because there were always a variety of sea life being brought to bear. Most often whales, because they are extremely large and handy for battering things.
They did love them some whales.
Yeah, there was always some whale species available to capsize a boat or just put some serious dents into Black Manta's sub. And then you had the coolest thing in the world in my childhood memories, and that was when some generic villain had set tidal waves to menace some economically important beach town, and Superman flew over to a pair of bulldozers that were conspicuously parked on the beach, yanked free their scoops, and tossed one to Aquaman like you would toss someone a bag of Fritos.
Right, just, there you go.
And Aquaman caught it, and with Superman-level strength, joined Superman in blocking a tidal wave with the insubstantial scoop of a bulldozer. That's not a tidal wave. That's like a Point Break-level super wave that you're... The dead presidents are
Utah's getting ready to ride that wave.
Exactly. That's not a sufficient wave to threaten, or certainly not a sufficient deterrent to a genuine tsunami level tidal wave.
But he had all these powers. But this is also cited as the time that he became started being seen as the joke. And I'm not sure why. I watched all of these.
He became one of the more common core members to have all the quirks and, you know, kind of play the joke, the comedy relief with, you know, like, I very distinctly often cite this is his love of buttermilk biscuits.
What?
Oh, yes. That was a big deal on one episode that Wendy was going to be baking up some of her buttermilk biscuits, and Aquaman was quite enamored of them and was gleefully devouring one at the end of the episode. But the thing about it is, my young logical mind began to realize, you know how hard it is to cook a biscuit at 16 atmospheres?
That's true. I mean, we just learned what a league was.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get. It's like the, you know, like when you go up in the mountains, there's like mountainous directions for baking.
Right. And it takes like a million years longer.
Yeah. Just read Michael Crichton's Sphere. You'll learn all about cooking undersea. And I think there is actually something about buttermilk biscuits in that as well.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because Crichton was, yeah, he was.
I think you're thinking about Andromeda Strain. I think that's the.
No, Andromeda Strain was just a big pit in the ground.
Right, full of buttermilk biscuits.
Oh yeah.
Well, they had to feed those diseased monkeys something.
It's really a question of, it's like the chicken and the egg. Was it the monkey or was it the buttermilk biscuits?
Yeah, these Andromeda Strain laden biscuits.
What is wrong with us? So many things are wrong with us.
Just dump them in the monkey pit.
Just dump them. You got that buttermilk biscuit? Just throw them in the monkey pit. It's fine.
Crazy little apes lead anything, and then you get Caesar.
Yeah, then you get. We just made another joke. Somebody, I hope somebody's keeping track of this somewhere.
I know. I really. Somebody does need to just go back and find every reference, every little nuance,
every jump, how we end up where we do. But Lord, I don't know what how we. Anyway, yeah. So, but I did. Did they throw just too much at this character at that time period to, you know, to make it? To make it a viable character for somebody to like, or did they try too hard? Was it a try-hard situation?
That's a difficult question to answer, because when I was initially watching these as they aired, mind you, yeah, I remember the egg-suck environment, and I remember the... well, the geezer Ebenezer was from Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
But I definitely remember Professor Noah Tall and King Plasto, and, you know, how much can Aquaman engage the ultimate computer?
Okay.
So you wind up with that same sort of situation with Aquaman and the as a charter member of the Justice League, is you've got to find something for him to do.
Right.
To the point, I think occasionally they took the bat boat out and, like, you know, put a bunch of depth charges or something just to get him out of the house for a while.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that is... You know, if you're a comic book fan, or if you're, people underestimate the intelligence of children. So
absolutely,
if you're pandering, your audience is going to know it. And I think that might be what happened here, is that maybe they were pandering to their audience with this character, and the audience knew it and took it as a joke.
Yeah, and especially in retrospect, it seems rather awkward that at one point Aquaman goes to the aid of an offshore oil rig, where the two creeps that thought the money was the root of all evil, so they were going to destroy anything of any kind of commodities.
Okay.
And the guy was complaining that the what they were pumping out of the black gold had turned into orange juice looking stuff.
Right.
And Aquaman was deeply concerned about, you know, the stability of their enterprise, and, you know, it seemed in retrospect it'd be like, well, good, maybe you creeps will pack up the show and get out of here.
So,
you know, that, and this was like right on, this whole thing was like right on the cusp of the so-called energy crisis.
Is that right?
And I think that's what was really going on, is the international oil shortage that was foisted upon us in the 70s, which, you know, now when there seems to be an endless supply of fuel,
right,
and nobody even so much as bats an eye anymore, some 30 some odd years later, it had to have been
right
that mysterious blue jet. So it becomes sort of like a Elijah Price where you're, these stories were based on something in reality.
All right. Let's double back here. So, yeah, I mean, but they also, you know, he didn't have the coolest, again, costume, didn't have the coolest rendering. Like, his powers were displayed in a really kind of dumb way. It's very hard to...
I mean, there's not a lot of assistance you can garner from the entire fauna of the Great Blue Sea when you're, you know, you and the super friends are okay.
Yeah, I
you know, it's not a flyover state for flying fish.
No, I understand that, but you know, the little circles coming out of the head, you know, was
oh yeah, you had, there had to be some way, I guess, for the producers of the cartoon to visualize his power.
Right.
So the concentric circles of telepathy.
And I'm not saying that I think that they were...
As Aquaman summons a pair of sea turtles!
That he's going to ride like some sort of weird hoverboard around the ocean? Can't you swim faster than sea turtles, Aquaman?
Exactly. The sea turtle is probably among the slower swimming animals of the sea. I might have done better just to latch onto the dorsal fin of a marlin or something. Those things can book.
It's... But I think that's kind of what I'm saying is that
Aquaman summons a marlin. Those things can book.
I think it's pretty easy to make fun of that.
Yeah.
In all, you know, if you're trying to point to something to make fun of, I think it's pretty easy to point to Aquaman's little things that the concentric circles, the you know, his sea life Wi-Fi, as well as you know all the other weird things, and say, yeah, I can make fun of this, and I think that it got latched
sort of
on
like
to
the RKO radio picture. You know, they have to have like something that illustrates the broadcast.
Yes. Yes, you are. Yes, that's exactly what I was getting at. And it's just easy to do. It's easy to point at that.
I will have to point out, though, I love the fact that DC Direct or DC whatever they're called now, they're...
DC Collectibles, I think.
Yeah, that they produced an action figure of Aquaman with an interchangeable concentric circle funnel thing attached to his forehead.
That's cool. I do like that a lot. So where do we go from there?
Well, the next, you've done some great research on, or someone else had for us.
Right, quote unquote great research. I did look around quite a bit, but yes.
But yeah, you did find a really great chronological, at least Aquaman as Aquaman appearance.
Wait, we've gone too far. We need to back up a second.
Oh, okay.
Because right around this time, before we jump forward out of Super Friends Land, there is a show we need to discuss. A show that I've watched very much in passing, very much on UHF, and never really watched until now. I've decided I need to watch.
You absolutely do, because I watched this as it aired.
Okay, so
and
you're
was
gonna
probably
have to break this
rare
down.
To miss an episode. And I do believe you're speaking of a program that starred a young pre-Dallas Patrick Duffy.
Oh, yes, I am.
Well-waxed Patrick
Just
Duffy.
Smooth as a dolphin.
Yeah, it was smooth as a dolphin's ass. And we're speaking, of course, of The Man from Atlantis with... a hairless, except for the top of his head, Patrick Duffy playing the sole survivor of the ancient city of Atlantis. Possessed of, whenever the budget dictated, webbed this tremendous amount of webbing between his finger prosthetics, and a Speedo in the most awkward swim pattern since The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes. But does this show in any way tie into Aquaman. It has to, right?
I think there had to be something. I think if this show had been done today, they would have been sued.
Okay, yes.
For being an Aquaman ripoff. But the reality was, this was a period where you just really didn't have anything Aquaman going on. And a lot of unusual programs were coming out and finding some success. And, you know, this is post-Star Trek sci-fi.
Okay.
And because it was more like this bunch of scientists find this Atlantean and drive him around on their submarine all day and look for, you know, get into adventures and stuff.
Right.
Under the sea that require his unique abilities. It never became like, you know, the man from Atlantis who goes on land and fights crime.
Yeah, but he fights sea crime, doesn't he?
He does fight a lot of sea crime.
It's just all the sea crime, really, at the end of the
day.
Yeah,
apparently there's a lot of criminals and aliens and monsters that all live under the sea. They really bought into the idea that everything's better down where it's wetter, and they went nuts.
Never been comfortable with that line in Little Mermaid. Still not comfortable with that line.
It's Disney After Dark, but...
But yes, so... But I mean, the origin story is like... Dude washes up on beach. It's just... It's really close. But this was 75. So, 75, it went for two seasons. And...
Indeed, and in fact...
movies, right?
I believe that there was a... And it actually was picked up as a comic as well.
Was it?
There actually was. We talked about that. It has been forever ago, but back when we did, I think it was on Hey Kids Comics Live, when we did our TV episode.
Okay.
We actually touched briefly, among yes. the many, many other things, about
Marvel
The
did
Man
it.
From Atlantis. Marvel, yeah.
Bill Mantlow did it. Okay. All right. I get it. Okay. Yeah, but I wanted to bring that up because it's too close to say it's too close to let go and say it was a coincidence.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on The Man from Atlantis.
Isn't he a little tall to be The Man from Atlantis?
No, he wasn't the, I guess, you know, in a conceit because he did try out and Duffy got the part. Perhaps that's where this all came from, but... Yeah, apparently he was in an episode titled Giant.
Well, no duh.
Yeah, exactly.
No duh. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
But there is a DC Comics connection to The Man from Atlantis.
What?
Well, he apparently played Fark, which is like someone with a really bad speech impediment saying shark.
Jeez,
Fark.
Played Fark?
Fark, was his character. But more importantly, TV's King Tut.
No.
Victor Bono appeared in a couple of episodes as a recurring villain.
Okay. That's awesome. So,
there is that sort
later
of
or
like
whatever.
A degree of separation between The Man from Atlantis and any sort of off-comic versions of DC Comics.
That's great. All right, so... We're running a little low on time, so I want to kind of do a rapid fire.
Oh, yeah. We've got to swim through the Aquaman.
Yeah, so let's hit some rapid fire. Okay, so Entourage. What do you know about Aquaman and Entourage?
This was the first I'd seen of it.
It was the joke of Entourage.
Oh, really?
Like, that was the joke of Entourage, was that they were going to make an Aquaman movie, and the joke was that it was going to be awful. Like, that was the... Because, like, how could you possibly decide to do an Aquaman movie? You know? Like, that's the... That was the... So, joke's on them.
Exactly. Take that, Entourage.
Right. So, that was Entourage. Smallville. Now, I know you have...
What year are we talking about here? Because there was something I actually saw. We went to go see Aquaman at the Alamo Drafthouse, and they are doing God's work in cinema. And before each... film, they actually put together their own pre-show reels for every single movie. I mean, granted, sometimes it's a bit of a stretch. Sometimes it really, like, especially with historical type films, it really sets the stage ahead of time.
Sure, yeah.
But apparently, they actually showed some scenes from this movie, and I'd almost forgotten about it, in 1984.
Okay.
Some filmmakers ponied up $10,000.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
To make a film titled Aquaman, The Cast of the Angler. And it was a little short film that was pretty much the first Aquaman movie.
Really? And when was that?
1984.
Jeez, when did... It wasn't Corman. Corman did the Fantastic Four, but wasn't there a Justice League movie that we don't talk about nearly enough on this show?
There was. There were a couple of different... Like, there was a Justice League movie that came out sometime in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know that Aquaman was in it.
I'm trying to see if he was.
Because Burt Ward and Adam West reprised their roles as Batman and Robin.
1997? Is that it? No, that's the animated. That's not what
Yeah,
this is.
There was a superhero role.
There it is. No, there was a 1997 Justice League movie that
now
did there, not have Aquaman in it. It did not
now
have
that Aquaman. One may be the 97 one may be the less... tongue-in-cheek with David Ogden Stiers as...
Yes, that's it.
Okay. There was one before that.
What? What?
And I don't think that... it had Huntress and it was just super campy.
Yeah, this one had Fire and Ice and Green Lantern, Guy Gardner, Green Lantern and a Flash and the Atom. So that's what this one had.
And one day we're going to have to do a show about these.
Yes, yes. We'll revisit that because we did a fan film show, but these aren't fan films.
No, these were actual productions. Legends of the Superheroes.
Yes, we need
on
to do it.
NBC in 1979.
All right, hold on to that because...
So we are going to come back to that because Charlie Callis played Sinestro.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. Damn it. Okay, yeah, we're going to come back to that.
Yeah. They wanted me to go up against Darkseid, but I said, I'm yellow.
I'm yellow. And then he fell out of the top center square.
That's right. To his death.
To his death. Smallville, Cole.
All right. Smallville.
What do you know? Do you remember?
I remember Smallville gave us the hot Lois scene that would become part of the opening credits in a future season.
Right. You are correct. Does somebody save me? And then it cut to like an
ambulance.
Yeah,
it was like, wow.
Yes.
I mean, you know, she was a babe, but we didn't know how much a babe. I don't know. It's, you know, Uncle Mike says he's quite a babe.
Right. So he obviously would go
new,
to the University of Miami.
Uncle Mike.
Old Uncle Mike.
Uncle
Mike. Angelo. Angelo let me in. Angelo, let me in. I'm your Uncle Mike.
Well, Mike, you remember me?
We should talk about letting Angelo work more around here.
Not as the case may be. Just let Uncle Mike in.
Just let
but,
him in.
Yeah, that was the one where you had Arthur Curry.
Correct.
His first television appearance on Smallville.
Correct.
Also, for those pressed for time, like Lois Lane, AC.
Yeah, yeah, you had to call him AC. Because it was, you know, it was, I guess at this point it was college.
Well, yeah, I think it may well have been. And Aquaman-esque guy runs afoul of Lex Luthor's nefarious water-based plots.
But he's a marine biologist, so he knew his way around it.
And then apparently does come back.
He reprises his role, like, at the very, very end.
Yeah, and then there was apparently one other episode, because I've seen a clip from it, and it was after we sort of fell out of, or more accurately, it fell out of favor with us. About the time we stopped watching, apparently Mira appears
yes.
in an episode.
Well, that's part of, you know, at the end when they were kind of
very awkward clip where she's like, "I am Mira, wife of Orin."
When they're kind of going, the Justice League, maybe, you know, like at the end when they're starting kind of putting together a team of people without costumes on.
And then they, right when they stop sucking, they stop
making. Yeah, but she and he were a part of that. Okay, pushing forward.
Yeah, within the supervillain group.
To one that is near and dear to my heart. The Aquaman TV show that never was, starring the Green Arrow from Smallville.
Future Green Arrow.
Because that wouldn't have been confusing.
That's right. He was Green Arrow on that, not the man who would become Green Arrow.
Correct, because the man who becomes Green Arrow is, which Amell is it? It's not Robbie. Robbie's my favorite one. The other Amell.
Can we get the Amell wheel out? And...
Yeah, it's Hormel. Makes a mean chili. Yes, so this one was never made because this poor show, which we could have gotten an Aquaman show. Maybe it's for the best that we didn't, but we could have gotten an Aquaman show that was the Green Arrow guy from Smallville. What the hell? I cannot for the life of me. His name is Kevin Pierce. No. Hartley was his last name. I remember that. Justin Hartley. It was right at the cusp of the WB UPN merger that made the CW, and
it sort of fell victim to that.
Right, they made it for the WB, and then the merger happened, and they didn't pick it up. But he's running a dive shop in Florida, and then he figures out because Lou Diamond Phillips tells him, "I wish so hard I was making that up, but I'm not." That he's the king.
Lou Diamond Phillips
Atlantis.
Kind of like the Willem Dafoe of television in this case.
Yes. Cole, now, I want you to hold. Batman Brave.
It was not that terribly long ago. In fact, very, very recently, that I spoke of your justification, your way that I could at least.
I can't remember what I said, because it was on a show, and you know how I get on a show.
Oh, trust me, I know how I get on a show. You have the most brilliant observation that has allowed me to make peace with the Brave and the Bold Aquaman to a tiny degree.
Okay.
And that is that there exists a rainbow that begins at Brian Blessed and ends at Freddie Mercury. And in the center of this rainbow, the Brave and the Bold Aquaman.
Well, a moment of genius that I'll never be able to recreate ever in my own mind.
That was inspired, because it so perfectly articulated what I could not.
Well, you hate, at least hate it. I understand that you've come to calm with the character.
No, I still hate him, but...
But why?
Helped elevate. Before the movie came out, it helped elevate the Jason Momoa Aquaman, because there was at least something worse.
So why don't you like this depiction of Aquaman? We've never gone over this.
The biggest struggles you have with Aquaman, and, you know, he's straighter than a swordfish's dick, but... Struggle.
I need to do some biological research real quick. You can just keep right on going. We're getting reports from the biology desk. Okay, yes, swordfish have very straight penises. You are you're clear.
It's as they say in marine biology circles, it's plumb necessary.
Damn it! That was a joke. That was a joke.
But he suffers from an inexorable perception that he's a homosexual.
Do you feel that way about this character?
I feel that he's got this... I mean, and the WB version didn't help. That it seems like this cartoon version of Aquaman was trying so hard to meld the Super Friends Aquaman with the the Peter David Harpoon Aquaman with such considerable bombast as to be like, oh, look, kids, proof of concept, he's gay.
But isn't, I mean, I got a more, I guess I got a more, it's still dumb, right? Still the butt of the jokes, but I got a more Space Ghost vibe. I got like an Adult Swim.
Okay.
Space Ghost vibe, like almost the Tick, almost the Tickian in like just obliviousness, you know, I guess. I don't know. But it doesn't matter because it doesn't exist anymore. So we're fine now. We're fine. We got some good good comedy out of it, and now we're back to
being yeah. Right. It was a very bothersome incarnation.
And there've been quick hits, cameos from then on. You know, he was in Teen Titans Go and one of the Lego movies. Always the butt of the joke. Always the butt of the joke. Always the butt of the joke. And now, lo and behold, 2018 rolls around, and we get an Aquaman movie. So, Cole and I have not had a chance to really discuss the Aquaman movie officially. Unofficially, yeah. Of course, these are all of our, you know, Richard Nixon recorded tapes. These are the only thing that's official in our lives. Anything that's
right.
Not off mic is unofficial.
Anything we redacted.
Right. So, what did you think of this movie, you know, for God and the crab people and
okay, well, I have to say the first question that I have been asked, other than did you like it because of my, you know, being known as an Aquaman fan or an Aqua fan, if you will, was, were you bothered that the seahorses had legs? This is the question you ask the you know, Momoa nemesis. Were you bothered that the seahorses had legs?
Well, were you?
And my answer remains, I was happy that there were giant seahorses.
Okay.
And a talking Leoplerodon, Charlie.
Now, were the giant seahorses in any way accurate to anything you know about prehistoric marine biology, or did they just pull that one out of their collective...
I think they wanted something other than a fuchsia seahorse.
Why would you ever want something?
I know. That's why I started my campaign Back to the Fuchsia.
Damn it.
But, that being said, I think that it was some sort of, you know, radioactive amalgam of a normal seahorse that got gorgoed. And as a result, kind of... had adaptations akin to a leafy sea dragon.
Right, and that's what I got, like a giant leafy sea dragon out of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the seahorse is intrinsically a fish. It is more closely related to the common trout than it is to any sort of horse. So, could the pectoral fins simply mutate into four limbs? Absolutely, they could.
I love the fact, I'm a really big fan of the fact that you just explained on our podcast that a seahorse is closer.
Well, there's a lot of confusion there.
Listen, people. Tuna lot... being the chicken of the sea, that's just good PR.
That's right.
They are not in any way, shape,
they're
or form.
They're not in any way avian.
That's right.
They're not flightless birds that have gills. But, you know, dear God. Plus, there's also a lot of people drowned during the underwater production of Black Widows.
Sea Biscuit. That's a joke that I just had in my brain.
Yeah, there we go. So I actually enjoyed Aquaman more than I thought I would. I was very happy with the on-screen realization of Black Manta.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Not solely due to his association with Aquaman, was always my favorite supervillain. I just thought he looked kick-ass, and he had that weird metallic voice that Hanna-Barbera ascribed to anyone wearing a mask made of metal.
Yes, yeah. No, it was great.
That little tinny ring to your voice that was added in post-production.
It was great, and I think they got a lot right, you know? And I think... at the end of the day, say what they got more right than anything is what Aquaman fans, and I was reading a story that said fans of the original Aquaman aren't even going to recognize this Aquaman. And I'm like, first of all, fans of the original Aquaman know that he's a badass.
Yeah.
Like, we've been upset for the past 20, 30 years because he hasn't gotten his due.
This author has simply made quite clear he knows nothing about Aquaman.
Right, right.
If it's an Aquaman pre-2019, he has clue zero.
Yeah, so they finally gave us the badass Aquaman, which I know we're not talking about comic books necessarily, right? But, you know, they've slowly been building a badass Aquaman in comics, too, over the last 30 years. Because you mentioned a name, Peter David. And Peter David worked really hard to badass up Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all of my misgivings, and if you've listened to this show, rhetoric about Geoff Johns, Jeff made a badass Aquaman. Made him into, you know, what is essentially, you know, Game of Thrones of the sea, and gave him a lot. So I think.
But I also think it's important to note from the comic standpoint that Aquaman has had long-running titles as the title character
forever.
At least as many published issues within the collective runs, if not more, than Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Yes, you are absolutely. And also, yeah, well, not and also, but deserves the respect that he's getting now as a DC character, as a comic book. And I think you hit the nail on the head yesterday when you said this is DC's Ant-Man.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were sitting on.
Yes, indeed.
Until it went down, and then they said, oh, hell, we've got a
young one. Oh, yeah, in fact, there's already in the works Aquaman and the Sea Wasp.
Oh, is there? That's nice. That's good.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a sea wasp that we talked about before.
We talked about that sea wasp before.
Highly venomous, the all-star Aquaman.
Yes, the Frank Miller's all-star Aquaman.
But, yeah, you know, I think we're going to see a pop culture turn with Aquaman where he's no longer the brunt of the joke. You know, if you look at, like, Family Guy that lampoons and throws barbs at absolutely everyone and everything, with the woman being attacked on the beach and Aquaman out in the surf wishing he could help.
Right. Like, just that kind of dumb shit.
Like, I think, is it from SpongeBob or something? Some cartoon, I've seen pictures of a decidedly Aquaman-style character with wearing a couple of starfish bikini.
Yes. They've all done it, man.
Yeah, everybody wants to take a little stab at poor Aquaman because he can't do anything. But I have to say that The Big Bang Theory did a wonderful tribute to the Aquaman cartoon by having Raj dressed as Aquaman riding a fuchsia seahorse.
Well, I mean, they know it. I mean, they dug deep. It was just bad. Like, they dug deep for their jokes, make no mistake. They just, it was deaf. They were tone-deaf jokes that they really worked on. All right. So I have one more thing I want to talk about. And we did not talk about this, I think, on the show. No, I guess we did talk about the Power Record, didn't we, or didn't we? I can't remember.
Wow. No, we didn't. We have not talked about that yet, and that's very important. I also want to point out that there were some other various appearances of Aquaman incarnations that I don't know that we touched on, per se. For example, the very Peter David-esque Aquaman with the harpoon in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Oh, yeah.
That Aquaman actually appeared in his traditional togs in the Superman the Animated Series in the 50th episode. I didn't realize that had ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in those shows, he was pretty prevalent and taken fairly seriously. Like, we were coming around to, and I think that's because they knew their their source material and they knew their audience well enough to know that they knew that Aquaman wasn't the brunt of the joke.
Well, that and they knew that fans would cry foul if Aquaman wasn't part of the team. Like, how do you do that?
Right. Like, he's the team.
But one thing I didn't know from what you had sent me, the Aquaman and Friends Action Hour in 2003?
Yeah, yeah. Is that the one that never got made, or...?
Apparently, it was 7 episodes. And, only aired on Cartoon Network in Latin America.
Yeah, that I was going to say. I think it finally got some airtime.
That's why I never heard of it. Okay.
I think it finally got airtime here at some point, but it wasn't recently. That's for sure. It wasn't recently. It was, or, you know, it wasn't at the time. It took a while to get it on to and I think it's available on the DC now, too.
Okay.
Yeah. But I want to talk for a second about this record, because I went and found the audio, and I'm going to play it after the show. So I have the, whatever, 6 minutes of audio from this that they tell. But they used to make records. You know, and 75 is when we had it. And Cole and I have both since discovered that we both had the same record.
Yes, indeed. We found it at a thrift store or something years ago.
Yeah.
We being Catherine and I, not Andy and I.
Well, could have been.
Otherwise, we'd know we had
the same
record, yeah.
This is the Power Record Justice League record album. Side A has the Justice League song, Wonder Woman's The Reach, Brunhild, Plastic Man's The Invasion of the Plastic Men, and then side B has Metamorpho, Fumo the Fire Giant, The Flash, The Three Faces of Mr. Big, and last but not least, Aquaman, Defeat of the Dehydrator. And I'm telling you, I'm going to cut of the Dehydrator into this show.
Oh my god, and you just reminded me of something. I need to see if I can find imagery for it.
Okay.
I used to have a Viewmaster Aquaman reel.
What?
And somebody had this submarine that fired a ray at animals that, like, all of your favorite African animals happened to be hanging out on the beach one day.
Okay.
And apparently they got blasted by this ray that turned them into enormous aquatic monsters.
All right.
And there it is, Viewmaster 3D Spectacular. Not much to be found on this, but I did find one image. I'll see if I can clean it up. And it, you know, if you can imagine like an African elephant with giant scalloped fish fins for ears.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a perfect shot of the aquatic elephants and a giant lion attacking a submarine while Aqualad and Aquaman come to the rescue.
That's fantastic.
Is that not just the most beautiful thing you've ever heard?
It's wonderful, and I want it posted.
Oh my god, yeah, I'm gonna have to use this for the...
Yeah, for sure.
Especially if we're talking about Aquaman and other media. That was a rare and unique event where Aquaman is part of the Viewmaster set.
Hell yeah.
That apparently had Superman, Batman and Robin, a number of different reels, but Aquaman got full coverage with those characters.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, AF.
We should probably wrap this up. I think we've gone pretty long. I think we've done a good job, and we could have kept going probably for another couple hours, to be completely honest.
Oh, absolutely.
But
well,
I have to
say one thing. As an Aquaman fan and as a toy collector,
okay,
one of my favorite acquisitions of late last year, early this year, has to be Willem Dafoe as Vulko on a saddled hammerhead shark.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Willem Dafoe. He did a pretty good job. I'm into
It was a wonderful Vulko, and... So we should probably go ahead and wrap things up and get ourselves on out. But I'm still just in awe of the level to which Aquaman succeeded.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, 100%.
I am thrilled that he's finally getting his due, and this is going to have a lot of people sit up and think, well, you know, maybe I should check out this Aquaman.
It's just, maybe this isn't such a joke after all. Because I think a lot of people went into it thinking it was going to be
Yeah.
That joke.
This was going to be that Jack Black Green Lantern we never got.
Right. And they, I think they were blown the hell away by it, and I'm so glad that they took it as seriously as they did. I mean, it still played for fun. It was, there were still some really funny parts to it, but they made it the first, I guess it's the first real superhero I've seen that could be considered a superhero adventure movie.
Yeah, and it's the, I think it's the first real departure from the darkness of Warner superhero films.
Yeah.
And I think we needed that kind of softening of the blow to make room for the Shazam film that was denied us a decade ago.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Because, you know, we can't do this movie. It's not dark.
Right. It's not dark enough. We've got to make it super dark. But turns out you don't. Turns out you don't. All right, Cole, plug us up. We're getting out of here.
All right. Yes, indeed. Well, we are coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. Be sure and drop us a line at JCUmail@yahoo.com. And you can, Andy will have all the other social media things here in a moment, but check us out. Check me out every first and third Sunday of every month on Isle of Toys on the third Sunday of every month. And the Rancor Pit live the first and third Sundays of every month. Isle of Toys being 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central on its one day a month, and Rancor Pit on 10:30 to 11:30 Central on its 2 days a month. However, in February, the first Sunday of the month, Figments, the Unexplained Mysteries podcast, and Isle of Toys will be trading places.
Oh.
So I will be on the first Sunday of the month, and we'll be switching with Eddie and Colleen Medina, who and Eddie will be joining me in the studio on the first Sunday of this month, 9:30, 10:30 a.m., and we're going to talk about the comic book, I'm sorry, the toys in comics and television.
Interesting.
The cartoons and the comics that were based on toys.
That's a good show right there.
Because there are no shortage of them, including a very obscure electric racing set cartoon.
Really?
So be sure and tune in for that.
All right. Well, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at HK Comics Show. We're not on hiatus yet, people. It's getting close because we got to get all up into that AllCon business. But
yes,
we're not
indeed.
There yet. So we got one more show to do before that happens. Enjoying 2019 to its fullest. This has been a great year for Hey Kids Comics. I think that's all I got to say, Cole. Do you want to say goodnight?
Good night, everybody. And in the words of Aquaman,
I just wanted to see how long you would do it. Stay tuned for all of the feet of the dehydrator. Thank you so much.
'Jim, what time's the supply ship due in? My food supply's getting pretty low and it'll be dark soon.
It's overdue already.
Overdue? Boy, there must be a better way of making a living than running a lighthouse on an island in the middle of nowhere. Whenever folks on shore need anything, they hop down the corner store and get it. But out here, you gotta sit around and wait and wait and wait.
Hold it, Pete. There's a message coming in on the radio.
Yeah, same old story, I suppose. Supply ship delayed until tomorrow.
Shh, quiet. Good Lord. The supply ship has disappeared.
Disappeared? On a day like this? Not a cloud in the sky. Not a whitecap.
The report said that the Coast Guard got an SOS a few hours ago. A sudden violent storm kicked up, and the ship was going up.
Going down, you mean?
No, no, it said going up. But the ship's radio cut off at that point. Maybe they meant it caught fire and she was going up in flames.
Flames? We would have seen flames. But that reminds me. Remember the Aurora Borealis last night? And the night before?
And unusually bright for the northern lights this time of year.
And strange how they look like a curtain of light dropping from the clouds to the ocean in just a small area. Northern lights usually seem to fill a whole part of the sky. Wonder if they affect the weather.
Talk about the devil. Look out there. The lights again. And am I seeing things, or is that a wall of water going up from the ocean to the sky like an illuminated fountain in reverse?
You're not seeing things, Jim. That's just what it is.
Aquaman!
Hi, Jim. Pete.
And Mara. What are the King and Queen of Atlantis doing out here?
We've been studying those mysterious lights and their effect on the water for some time now.
And frankly, we're worried. What if that curtain of light is in reality a sort of magnetic siphon controlled by intelligent beings from outer space?
Intelligent beings from some water-starved planet who, like ourselves, need water to survive.
And who have worked out a method of draining the ocean to provide life-giving water for their own planet.
Congratulations, Aquaman! Excellent reasoning for a mere Earthling, I must say.
And who are you and what are you doing here?
I am Hydro, the dehydrator from the planet Exodum. I have come to warn you, Aquaman, to remove all living things from the oceans of Earth.
But without water, they would die.
That is your problem. I am just trying to be what you would call humanitarian. In any case, within 24 hours, all the oceans of your Earth will be siphoned off to my planet.
Within 24 hours? That's impossible.
Oh, is it now? Look carefully at that curtain of light. Do you see that spaceship at the top? When I return there, I shall pull a switch which will activate the full power of our electromagnetic gravity intensifier.
Magnetic gravity intensifier? That explains the wall of water rising out of the sea.
Precisely. But what you see is only a small demonstration of its power, similar to the one earlier in the day in which the supply ship for this lighthouse was unfortunately caught up.
You murderer.
We wish Earth people no harm, but the people of Exodum must have your ocean. You have been warned. Farewell.
He's gone.
What are we going to do, Aquaman? Without water, not only everything in the sea will die, but so will every living thing on land.
We've got to stop Hydro before he pulls that switch. Come on, Mira. We're going to swim out to that curtain of light. Here we are, and there's the spaceship. Way up there.
Aquaman, we're being pulled up with the water.
Just what I figured. We'll ride the water right up to the spaceship. Oh, there it is. And there's the airlock. Hang on to me now. And we're in.
Aquaman, how did you...
Never mind that. Quick, Mira, jam that switch.
Got it.
Curse you both. But you will pay for this. The automatic controls on the spaceship have been activated, and we are already on our way back to the planet Exodum.
Aquaman, he's right. We're moving up. No, we've stopped. We're going down.
Right. Look out that window.
It's Topo, our pet octopus, and a whole army of giant squids. They're pulling the ship down with their huge arms.
How did they get up here?
I sent a telepathic command to Topo to get his friends, the giant squids, and ride the wall of water up to the spaceship.
The way we got up here.
And pull it down to the sea where we shall turn you, Hydro, over to the authorities on land.
This was Exodum's last hope. I have failed my people, and now they are truly doomed.
But life on Earth has been saved thanks to you, Aquaman.
And to you, my beautiful queen.